Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987. We're actually coming up on issue number 1500 next week. Issue number 1499 going online today for VIP members with exclusive columns from Bruce Mitchell on the Hardys, Greg Parks on proposed trades for Raw and SmackDown, my analysis of that John Cena Sports Illustrated promo, a cover story on the exodus of talent from TNA heading into their next set of TV tapings, and so much more. You can become a VIP member by going to pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip, and find out details on everything that comes with the VIP membership, nearly 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, instantly available when you become a VIP member, ad-free access to our website, and access to an ad-free version and plug-free version of this, the PW Torch Livecast, along with tons of other VIP-exclusive podcasts, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, and tons more. Find out full details on VIP membership at pwtorch.com/govip. If you love what we do here at the Livecast, you will absolutely get lost in the archives and be overwhelmed with great choices and top-shelf wrestling podcast content from our great staff. All right, well, it is Wednesday, March 1st, 2016. It is the midweek flagship, and this week, Travis Bryan from the East Coast cast and Pro Wrestling Torch columnist joins me on the program. We'll bring him into the show in just a second. Just a reminder that last night, Pat McNeil filled in for me as host with Greg Parks as his co-host on the post-SmackDown show because I attended SmackDown in person. I'll give some in-person perspective and notes throughout today's show. Monday, I hosted the Raw Post Show with Mike Chiari from Ring Rust Radio. Got some good feedback on that show, so check that out if you haven't yet. But let's move forward. We got so much to talk about today. What a big, big several days of wrestling news, including some TNA stuff and a lot of developments both on Raw and SmackDown. Travis Bryan from East Coast Cast, welcome to the Midweek Livecast.
What's happening, Wade? Livecast audience, what up?
We're going to talk a lot, I think, about SmackDown last night. We can also talk about WrestleMania developments and departures from TNA Impact. A lot going on this week. Travis, just first from you, because I haven't heard yet your thoughts on the big angle last night with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt. I think we all kind of assumed something like this was coming. How do you evaluate the payoff?
I have so many questions. So many questions. Just starting with, did Randy Orton sacrifice a WWE production camera and, you know, equipment? Yep. And how does the front office feel about that? You know, like, we authorized this shoot, this off scene, you know, shoot, and you go and destroy our stuff. But did Randy Orton go with equipment? And equipment, I mean the canisters of gasoline, because those old ass looking gasoline canisters look like they should have been something he found on Wyatt property. But if he went to the gas station or Advance Auto Parts earlier in the day and said, hey, I need some, you know, a couple of gas tank, you know, gas holder deals, and then they gave him those, like, what? No. Like, there's so many inconsistencies. As soon as the music started, I said, oh boy, we're in for something for this segment. And it was just weird and edited oddly in some parts, and God, just so weird. So weird.
Were we to believe that was live or that it was like a video mess? I mean, there's so many questions. This is like, you know, the 18th most important question. And WWE doesn't care about this stuff. I mean, they just don't. They think that all that matters is, ooh, cool. Or, oh, emotion, you know, there's emotions. Or if they do it in movies, then we get to do it. It's just a total disregard for, I mean, every author who writes a book, every one of them, if they sent in or if they were writing a book and sent in the transcript of the opening chapter and they didn't have a narrative structure, the book publisher would send it back and go, and you're an amateur. I mean, grow up, go to writing class, learn how this works. Same thing with TV show pilots. There's nothing about that. Now, here's the question. It might be amateur hour when they do this crap in terms of overproducing something and you got a cameraman or a camera equipment burning. You have post-produced music. You have this completely inappropriate for a bunch of – I was at the building last night, and, I mean, you've got this video that's not bringing smiles to people's faces. It's not a baby face move. It wasn't pleasant for the families who stuck around to – they were going to stay around, you know, for the John Cena dark match later in the night. The whole thing is just weird, but is it still – does any of that ultimately really matter, or is this kind of thing, Travis, kind of important for what WWE does, even with all the questions we have and some of my eye-rolling aspects to how amateurish the whole, you know, presentation is? Does it matter, or is it just important, given what WWE does, to have kind of cool stuff that's off-site like this every once in a while that goes outside the ropes and outside the backstage area?
I think that's a little it's good when they do stuff like that, if it's good.
Yeah, like, yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it.
Off-site to do a shoot or, you know, do a gimmick or whatever, it's not necessarily going to automatically equal, you know, quality. So,
Is there a way that they could have done that segment that would have had both of us? Because, I mean, is there a way that could have been done and tweaked in terms of its presentation, but still accomplished what WWE aimed to accomplish with it? Like, are we watching that or here the next day going, oh God, if they just did this and this and changed what Randy did a little differently here and the way they presented it and tweaked it there, this would have worked? Or is this sort of an angle where there's no way to accomplish whatever they're trying to accomplish and have it not come across as kind of, you know, amateur hour Wismo Gizmo segment?
They went 0 to 1,000, and just it's nonsense. It's just ridiculous. It's like, that was uncalled for. Kind of like this, like the feud was even in October when he joined and he was, you know, getting his butt kicked every week by the Wyatts when Randy was. It just wasn't a hot enough, emotional enough feud or anything to justify burning a guy's, I mean, essentially a barn down. And that also, I thought, because I just watched it this after this month, you know, an hour or two ago. I thought that was I saw memes and pictures and still shots of the Randy, and I had some fun with that image myself. I thought maybe, oh, crap, he burned his whole compound down. Like, he burned a barn down. Now, granted, that fire could easily get out of control, but that wasn't what they were getting over. It was that building where the supposed body of... And that, like, what? There's bones under there, and you're... What the hell? Like, Randy, like, what are they thinking? Like, there's a person under there, and you pour the extra gasoline in the hole with the worms. It was so weird. Wait, what the hell? And I just watched it, so it's, like, really, really fresh. And,
yes.
You know, but I just was left at a complete loss. Like, I don't know what to think. Like, this is just, like, AJ's going to get bumped somehow for this.
Oh, I know. That's the thing. When you look at the WrestleMania lineup, you're like, all right, we're going to do the Royal Rumble. We're going to do this big angle with Randy and Bray. We're going to incorporate Luke Harper into it. We're going to actually incorporate AJ into it. We're going to tease fans. I mean, the building last night at XL Energy Center was a great crowd, but it was not the anti-establishment minority, which is my term of the week, thanks to Road Dogg Brian James, who he calls people who boo Roman Reigns, the anti-establishment minority. That was not the crowd.
Well, why is it so loud then? Why is it so loud if it's a minority?
Well, right. Well, because they're the minority who pay money to go to shows, but they're not the ones who buy the network, but they're not the majority of the fans who watch on YouTube and make the ratings in 2017 irrelevant, according to Brian James. But anyway, I don't want to pick on him too bad because I hear, even cool, though he comes across as like this mindless zombie company man publicly, he's really a valuable voice behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, don't pick on him, mindless zombie puppet.
Well, I'll pick on him, but not too much. I mean, he's just being a company guy publicly, and it probably helps him influence things in a good way in other ways. But anyway, so the crowd was they were just confused about AJ winning. They're just like, whoa, okay. But they weren't confused in a way that I think they would have been confused in Philadelphia or Chicago, where they were like, okay, we heard, because we read the internet, we're on Reddit, we listen to the podcast, we thought it was supposed to be, you know, AJ's going to be against Shane and blah, blah, blah. Like, they weren't trying to figure it out. They were just like, oh, wow, okay, now we got AJ against Bray. Who are we going to cheer for at WrestleMania in the main event? Like, they're kind of, it seemed like they were kind of buying into it. They didn't see the next twist coming, because this was kind of a crowd that I sense just was there to follow the storylines as they unfold and not think that hard beyond that. But it was for the fans who want to see AJ main event WrestleMania, they gave them something, and then now it looks like they're going to take it away. You know, if you didn't read our report on PWTorch.com, we've got the full rundown of what happened, where Shane and Brian are like, at the top of the show last night, Daniel Bryan's like, ooh, we're going to have to reassess this number one contendership situation, figure out what we're doing for Mania. And then Shane came out late in the show and is like, yeah, Brian, you and I need to go talk. And AJ Styles is, you know, ranting and raving, you better not take this away from me, I earned it. And I mean, talk about, you know, and I want to talk all kinds of things to talk about in terms of Randy Orton. Is he a face or a heel in this? And is Bray a face or a heel based on what they did last night and what the context is of this whole storyline? But poor AJ, like, he had to win twice last night. I mean, really once, but I mean, the foot on the rope wasn't an actual pin, but nevertheless, he had to win twice last night. And now he's going to have something he earned that Daniel Bryan explicitly promised him at the top of SmackDown. I rewatched it last night when I got home from the taping or from the TV event. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you win, you get a shot. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And now they're going to probably take that away from him. AJ is going to look like the babyface. Shane is going to look like the jerk who took something away from AJ and gave it to Randy, who just destroyed property, destroyed a WWE camera, may or may not have burned alive camera people, and went way overboard. Like, is there a storyline justification, Travis, if you're just buying into the whole narrative? Is there a storyline justification for what Randy did? If Randy wanted to fight Bray Wyatt and beat him, just wrestle him and pin him and then brag about how you're a better wrestler. Like, what was this all about? How do you explain this to somebody who's just introduced to WWE going, why did that Randy guy do that?
You can't. You shouldn't try. You should just go... You should, yeah, I don't know, make up your own thing. They won't know if they, like, oh, yeah, that guy, like, punched his sister in the face. Like, so, you know, and then, you know, kicked his pregnant mom or something. You can't if you try to use what we've been given on TV for the last 5 months. You cannot.
Yeah.
It's unexplainable because none of it makes any sense. It was a tepid feud that they tried to do what Orton did and say, oh, we can heat this thing up, and they just used three canisters of gasoline to burn down a stupid wooden barn.
Yeah. All right, there's a lot more to talk about. We're going to take your phone calls. Our number is 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345, or as Pat McNeil says, 515-605-9345. And Travis Bryant from the East Coast Cast is my guest. Hey, Travis, give a plug for your show here early on the midweek. Tell people what about your show is different than this besides the sheer length of the program, and why people should check it out if they enjoy you here on the live cast.
Yeah, it's kind of a no-holds-barred show. No holds barred as far as wrestling topics go, pop culture stuff, social stuff, whatever. You got to comment or question to ask it, talk about it. You will not be censored in any way. So because of that, it is not the minivan show of the Torch. It certainly is the one you listen to with your buddies when your wife isn't around, unless she's just really cool.
Unless you got a really cool wife.
Yeah, which our fan base totally does. So, but yeah, the East Coast Cast, you can find us on eastcoastcast.com. We're on live every Wednesday night, as we will be tonight, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, and we go way into the night, as has been alluded to. Yes, eastcoastcast.com. Me, Cam, Rich, a whole cast of characters and usuals and, yeah, returning stars. So, yeah, so check us out, eastcoastcast.com. Matter of fact, go to @EastCoastCast on Twitter. We just put up our weekly poll, who's going to win at Fastlane, Goldberg or Kevin Owens. So go vote in the poll and like the page and do all that internet stuff.
Now, do you talk about wrestling?
Yeah, we occasionally.
Okay, good. Very good. All right. By the way, we will have news on our sister site all day and all week about the announcement within the hour that George St. Pierre will be facing Michael Bisping for the middleweight title, which is going to upset some other top contenders in that division.
But he just John Cena his way into
title shot. Yeah. So on the bright side, those contenders, those very top contenders in that division, Michael Bisping will never have to lose to them as badly as he probably would. And then those top contenders will then have a chance to destroy George St. Pierre. So it could be an interesting year. We'll see how things go. All kinds of interesting angles on this GSP announcement. I don't know if it was TMZ or TSN that just broke the news, but Dana White did confirm it. Big announcement, press conference Friday, and there will be he has to go through full 3 months of USADA testing. So we're looking at a summer mega fight. George St. Pierre's return immediately gets a title shot.
Wait, 3 months of testing?
Yeah. Yep, no pass for him like Brock got. So.
Oh, I didn't know. That's like a standard? Like everyone does that? 3 months?
Yeah. When you haven't been tested on a consistent basis, once you re-enter the fighting field, so to speak, then you gotta prove you've been clean for 3 months. So, but anyway, I will have more details. I mean, I'm kind of half listening to you plug the East Coast Cast and catching up on some details on this. So we'll have the full story and details at MMATorch.com, our sister site. Speaking of which, let's go ahead and tell you more about our sister site. When we come back, we start rolling through phone calls. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, welcome back to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, host of this show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, although I appreciate and thank Pat McNeil and Greg Parks for filling in for me last night while I was attending the SmackDown taping, sitting alongside Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. You can check out Jason and I discussing the world of wrestling last Wednesday on the midweek flagship here at PWTorchLivecast.com. Tomorrow, Diamond Dallas Page is my guest, is a new WWE Hall of Famer. Travis, you followed wrestling closely during the Beth Phoenix era. Jason asked me this last night. What's your favorite big-time Beth Phoenix match? And I'm going to turn your mic on. There we go. Is there a top memory of her Hall of Fame career that you have?
Not particularly.
Okay. Now, Jason,
I loved Beth Phoenix. Like, when she was around, when she debuted, I was all of... She's still... Her and Natty are still my avatar on the Torch message board. You know, love me some Beth Phoenix. but no, I can't tell you. When she won that title that time from someone, I don't know. Yeah.
I ran in on the wrong... You know, did the wrong... You know, just cool music.
My favorite music, probably of when she debuted, just so awesome. Yeah, love me some Beth Phoenix. But that Royal Rumble thing, that was nonsense.
Yeah,
and I hate that gets featured when they talk about her. Like, it's not a highlight.
Yeah, no, I mean, I liked her career, but I just don't know. Other than, you know, there was, you know, she had pretty good tenure. She was around for a while and was involved, but it just, not to treat the WWE Hall of Fame, you know, super stringently and seriously, especially the women's division, which, you know, it's not like there's six other women who headlined WrestleMania or were put in big money matches. But it just sort of feels like, well, you know, when we look at the list of women who haven't been inducted, who spent 5+ years in the company and we want to represent an era, you know, I mean, if that's a threshold and the standard based on the way women were promoted in that era, I mean, so be it. But it just, and I'm not saying it diminishes, you know, other people's accomplishments who get in the Hall of Fame. It feels a little bit of a stretch when I think of the, a little bit, not a lot, you know, when I think of the grand total legacy of women to honor for what they accomplished in the ring. Beth just seems like one of those debatable. She's one of those where you kind of debate, okay, is the standard at this level where she fits in or not? And I don't know. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. But all right, let's so much to talk about. Let's go to phone lines though, and bring some other callers into the conversation. I'm definitely interested in hearing what you all think of last night's angle, but we can talk about other topics also. Let's go ahead and start with area code. Where are we here? Hold on. Yeah, let's do this. Let's do Eric from Charlotte. There we go. Eric from Charlotte, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight? Or this afternoon, not tonight.
Hey, guys. Hope you're having a good afternoon so far.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to talk about smaller subjects from Raw. I just heard your live cast from earlier today. Y'all talking about Big E and the problems with that segment. One thing I noticed that I didn't hear y'all talking about was when he was talking about, I can't remember the line exactly, I think it was, take the shine off the shining stars in the ring. And then
I didn't write
breath, he said.
It was not
under his breath, he said, okay. He said, I didn't write that line, by the way, before they did the New Day Rocks bit. I was just wondering your thoughts on that, because I just feel like that's so detrimental to the whole process when they just blatantly say, we don't write this, we don't have a say in this, and how it just kind of slows down the pace of the show.
Yeah, Big E is kind of getting a reputation, Travis, for just kind of, you kind of want to pay attention to his promos because he just can't seem to help but have these little parenthetical asides that sometimes get edited out on the Hulu version and on replays online, and he gets in a little bit of trouble for. It's, I guess, part of the charm. He's always been a little, I don't know, how would you describe Big E's on-air personality mixing with the kind of quirky sense of humor he has in real life?
I'd call it money, if utilized in the correct way. I mean, if you ask Todd Martin, we all already know we know he didn't write that crap. Like because no one talks that way, as Todd always points out. People don't talk the way that they're scripted on WWE TV to talk. So I'd be embarrassed to say some of these lines too, not because they're just, you know, outlandish lines, but they're just corny and like, well, no one says that. No one has like these weird, not really puns, but kind of not puns. We're gonna take the shine off the shining stars. Like, well, they're not shining anyway. So it's just stupid.
That's how sixth grade girls write the story assignment in English class. Like, that's a line
I think even sixth graders are past some of that kind of stuff.
You might be right. Maybe that's give them.
I don't think it's. I don't know what that really means. Slowing down the show. It's just a split second, half a sentence. But I think it's fine. I think as long as he doesn't go too far, because some people don't get it and some people don't, and the people that get it. I have no problem with it, but I sort of get that it could be quote unquote detrimental, but we're way beyond that kind of stuff being detrimental. Sorry, I went off.
No, that's totally fine. Eric, anything else?
I also want to talk about Seth Rollins. Like, I know there are some bad parts with the segment as well as a couple of good things. I will say, his actual words and his message, it kind of helps his character a little bit. Like, he was saying the things that he should have said in September. Like, he finally admitted that he wasn't a great person when he was a heel. So now he's trying to make it better. So I thought that took a better step to making him a more viable face in the later part of this run.
Travis, your thoughts on Seth's sit-down promo on Monday where he was pelted with some CM Punk chants?
Yeah, I agree with the sentiment of the caller here, but like at the beginning when he started getting into that, you know, was I a good person? I was like, oh, okay, we're going to get like finally, but it just wasn't effective, and it's because of the foundation that he's performing on. Like that platform has been laid flat. For a long time, and layered and layered and layered, and you can't come in here with one good promo, you know, one decent to good promo slash explanation slash final realization, or you know, finally realizing that you know, you were a scumbag for, you know, years. It's just too little, too late. But it does help. It does. Like, okay, well, you know, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, apologizing or acknowledging and owning, you know, your past is, yeah, however you, any in a general sense, it's a good step, but it does sort of feel like this. I mean, that a promo of that variation would have been maybe the right thing to do, Travis, the Monday after you and I were at Extreme Rules in Jersey and watched Seth run in. Got the biggest babyface pop that I've felt in person in quite a while, and I've seen a lot of John Cena ring entrances in recent years. That was an explosion. That was yes, yes, yes. And then had he cut a promo along those lines, it would have been obviously somewhat different the next day and turned into a top babyface, but totally you know, acknowledged his past and essentially apologized for it. That would have been but now, I mean, he is so badly damaged. I don't think that he can be a good babyface anytime soon. I mean, I don't think he can be a good heel either. I think he is just broken and damaged by terrible booking. He's responsible for some of it, because I don't think that he's been a particularly effective babyface. I think his personality turned out to be much better as a heel, but I don't know. I went from, you know, 2 years ago and even, you know, right after Extreme Rules, just thinking this is one of their top three guys they need to covet. And now if there's an expansion draft and TNA gets to take somebody off my top 12 list, I leave Seth available.
Wow.
I think I could come up with 11 guys. Yeah. If you could only protect, let's put this, if you could only protect, you know, 8 or 10 guys on your roster, and then TNA got to take one of them, you know, like for their Las Vegas expansion team. This is an NHL reference for people who don't follow it. Then I would, I don't know that I'd protect Seth right now. I think I could come up with 8 other guys. You know, I'm not sitting here making the list, but I bet I could come up with 8 or 10 guys I'd rather keep than him right now. That's how badly damaged I think he is. And I don't think Monday night helped. Does that sound crazy, Travis?
No, I think Monday night did help. It didn't help enough. It didn't help, and it's a good start. If we're like, okay, the starting point is now, right here, this moment.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a good start. Like, now you just have to, you have to be thinking about next year's WrestleMania when it comes to Seth and his character and his effectiveness.
Yeah,
because you got to go. Okay, we've got to spend a solid year, like, getting this guy back to where he was even a year ago from, you know, now. So
he needs to stop being the whiny ex who got dumped by the love of his life. And that's essentially his character since he came back. Oh, Triple H, he chose Kevin Owens instead of me. And now he's brought in the Destroyer, Samoa Joe, instead of me. And you know, it's just like nothing he did was proactive. He didn't dump them, they dumped him, and I just don't know how you grow your setback after everything he's done since his comeback, and being, you know, brittle and breakable doesn't help either, you know, the perception of that, you know, it's a total opposite of the whole t-shirt campaign. So I don't know. I mean, when I say Monday didn't help, I guess just in a way it just cemented for me how damaged he is to the
now that he's at this point where he's having to try to, you know, take this other approach that they should have taken initially, because he does have to crawl back. But anyway, Eric,
well,
anything else for us?
Let me get,
go ahead, Travis.
Before we throw it back to Eric,
yeah.
I thought the best way of utilizing Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, assuming he's going to wrestle at WrestleMania, I thought the best way to get him over is to keep him off of TV and let that be the story. Is he going to be at WrestleMania? You don't get to see him until WrestleMania. Now, it's not it's a different type of, you're keeping him off TV for, I just think that would have been, I don't really have a thought-out explanation. I just thought, man, assuming he's going to wrestle, if he's just gone off TV for 2 months, and that's the assumption, and Triple H and Joe or whoever's just on TV talking about how, yeah, he's done, he's gone, and then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before WrestleMania, the match is booked. You get to actually making the match. It's not like an impromptu at WrestleMania, but you still don't see him. He just makes it known that he will be there and he wants to face Triple H, and Triple H is super confident and all that kind of stuff. But you don't get to see him, and that would have helped, I think. But we saw him.
Eric, anything else for us?
No, that's it. Thanks a lot.
Cool.
And I just want to
have
a good show.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks,
all right, we're going to go to our bottom of the hour break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Travis Bryant. This is the Midweek Flagship.
Do you love wrestling? Check out one of the hottest shows, Ring Rust Radio, breaking down WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, NXT, Lucha Underground, TNA, New Japan, and Indie Wrestling. The boys of Ring Rust Radio also interview some of the biggest names in wrestling, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, AJ Styles, John Cena, Roman Reigns, and many more. If you love the PW Torch live cast and you like to have fun, check out Ring Rust Radio. Find us on ringrustradio.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ring Rust Radio and email the show, ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
Monday night, Mike Chiari joined me. He was from Ring Rust Radio, and he made fun of the ad that you might have just heard. They're going to send over some fresh ads for us. Ring Rust Radio, a fellow pro wrestling podcast here on Blog Talk Radio Network. We're doing some cross-promotion. We've both grown kind of independently of each other over the years, and now we're trying to let each other's listeners know about the other program. So check it out, Ring Rust Radio. You can subscribe to it on podcast feeds or visit their website, ringrustradio.com. I'm joined by Travis Bryant from the PW Torch East Coast Cast, which will be on tonight live at eastcoastcast.com. You can stream it live or on demand or subscribe like you can to this very show, the PW Torch Livecast. Travis, quick question on TNA. I know it's kind of hit or miss whether you're any given year following TNA much, but the departure of the Hardys, the departure of Drew Galloway, that Mike McMahon and Andrew Sochak will be talking about that in depth tomorrow night as soon as Impact goes off the air here at pwtorchlivecast.com. It's our live weekly Impact-dedicated program. They'll be talking about it. Mike McMahon just put up on Twitter a bit ago that he thinks Drew Galloway's a bigger loss than the Hardys when it comes to TNA. Your thoughts on the state of TNA, what you're hearing, what you might be seeing, and just also Drew Galloway and the Hardys and their potential in WWE.
I think it's inevitable that those two acts, Galloway and the Hardys, will be back in WWE, possibly both on SmackDown. You know what? No, I take it back. Galloway will probably go to SmackDown. The Hardys will go to Raw. I think their tag deficiencies are because they're more of a higher profile show, and the Hardys are probably they'd be looked at as needed there more. Even though I'd make an argument the other way, but I think it's inevitable. I think I saw something earlier that Jade is now, they let her contract expire, so that's six people in the last however many days that are gone from TNA. I I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't get, because I'm not following it day to day, week to week, I don't get why, like, why now? Like, Hardee's, like, what's going on? You'd have to fill me in at least a little bit. Like, why are all these talents leaving?
Because TNA's not actually negotiating contracts with them until the end, and then they're feeling disrespected in the way that they approach the contracts. I think there's something going on in terms of the funding, or that there's just a lack of money, or, you know, that TNA and Anthem, they're going to run it on the cheap, and that's happening. Or it's sort of like in sports when a new GM comes in and has no allegiance to the draft picks from the previous GM, and it's just trade. Let's just form this team in my vision, and Jeff Jarrett and the Anthem people are just thinking in those terms. Now, I don't think they'd want to lose the Hardees, but the Hardees, Matt wanted a seat at the creative table. He wanted to have input. And I wonder if, you know, Jarrett and Dutch just kind of want, well, I mean, Dutch is just going to be along for the ride and try to help whoever is paying him and be a good employee. But Jeff might just want, he might not want to have other alphas around too. I don't know. I mean, it really is a story in progress, but to have tapings coming up and to be losing this much of their talent, who are they going to replace them with? Do we trust their ability to scout and acquire talent that's going to fill 2 hours in a way that Drew Galloway and Mike Bennett and Maria and the Hardees could? I mean, I don't know. I mean, are they going to – do they just take for granted that no matter what talent they feature, they can draw 250,000, 300,000 viewers and that's good enough, or what? I don't know. I mean, Anthem – since Anthem purchased a company, other than Jarrett doing a few interviews, which frankly are full of empty platitudes and nonsense so far – I haven't learned a lot from Jeff about his vision, because, I mean, they really are just these kind of one-dimensional platitudes that don't say anything. I have no idea what the direction of this company is and if they have leadership and what they have planned. So I'm eager to see. I hope that they're just being coy about it and they've got this really great concept that doesn't require, you know, arguably 5 of their top 8 guys to still be on the roster. So we'll see. All right.
What a joke.
Yeah. I mean, and at
I know,
this
I'm
point,
supposed to put like my creative trust in Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel. Like this is to a lesser extent. This is Dixie Carter not wanting to, not when she didn't hire Paul Heyman when she had the chance. Like, give Matt a seat at the creative table. He's, you know, he's done the most creative stuff that you guys have done and put out in the last 2 to 3 years. It's all been, you know, from him. So what the hell? Like, and you're Jeff Jarrett. You're great.
I don't know that you're Jeff Jarrett means the same thing to Jeff as it does as what you're implying. But yeah, he might think I'm Jeff Jarrett, not you're Jeff Jarrett. Anyway, all right. Let's go back to the phone lines here. We got a ton of people on hold. I've been eager to talk to you, Travis, about so much of this stuff. You have a lot of opinions about a lot of hot topics, and I've been curious to get your take on it, and then we could go on here. But let's keep incorporating our callers here. Go to Luke from Frankfort, Kentucky. Luke, welcome back to the show. What have you got for us?
Hey, Wade. How's it going today?
Doing good. What have you got? What's on your mind?
Good. Yeah. I just got a couple questions. Obviously, they had to do the Randy Orton angle at some point, but do you think they kind of just did it out of nowhere? I mean, it kind of just was without explanation. Like last week, he was a servant, and all of a sudden, he's burning down the complex. I'll start off with that question and let you and Travis respond first.
Yeah, Travis, again, I know I said, you know, how would you explain this to somebody if they just started watching? And you'd be like, well, you can't really do it. I mean, is there Randy – has Randy done anything along the way that, other than perhaps last night, that would, if you look back now, you're like, wait a second, you were never with them for real, and you did that to that guy, or you participated in that? Like, has he been part of any heinous actions that disqualify us from even looking at him as a babyface? And part B, to add on here to Luke's question, is Randy necessarily the babyface here? I mean, is it possible Randy's supposed to be the heel and Luke the Bray Wyatt the babyface?
That could be. I mean, the way Bray broke down and the fact that, you know, I mean, no matter how much you might not like a person, and we're, you know, dealing with that in, like, the real world, you don't death people's, like, burial stuff. Like, I'm a guy that says nothing's sacred. Like, nothing's sacred to me. Like, I don't hold things in that kind of esteem and reverence. But, you know, go kicking over headstones and, you know, and implying that I'm going to, like, burn and destroy the remainings of a person that this person, that's just gross. Like, you don't, like, that's, yeah, that's a total jerk move. So
it's heavy.
Could be that, and the way Bray responded, like, I swear there were real tears. Like, he, you know, he really, you know, went through it. And, you know, if we find out, like, we've never gotten a real story on who or what Sister Abigail was, if it turns out that that was, like, his 13-year-old sister who died of bone cancer, and, you know, like, they can go that way and totally make it, you know, like, aww. Like, you show some pictures, and she's got freckles and a pigtail, you know, like, that's, okay. Yeah.
I would love that.
It's, yeah, Randy is, yeah, at least it's totally ambiguous, or they're both heels, but I'm not sure you can even make an argument that Randy's a good guy. He seems, like, super petty. Like, well, you enjoyed, like, beating guys down and enjoyed the protection of the Wyatts for, you know, 4 or 5 months, and you know, nothing heinous besides what he did last night, but you can't, I don't look back and remember, like, oh, they, you know, broke that guy's arm, you know, and did that and that. Just normal within the realms of, you know, realm of normal pro wrestling, you know, beating guys up and participating in matches and backstage, maybe some jumping, but yeah, but still, he's an asshole for, you know, doing what he did.
Yeah, yeah. Luke, did we address your question, or do you have any follow-up?
No, I thought it was also kind of funny how Randy had gasoline all over his fingers, but he can let a match go all the way down to his fingertips.
To the tip!
and not catch
fire. I was surprised he didn't flinch. Like, way to go, Randy.
Yeah, exactly. My second question is kind of a weird question, but with, like, in regards to people like Curt Hawkins, the Shining Stars and stuff, obviously we know they're kind of like the lower end talent, but do you think it hurts the credibility of wrestling that they constantly always lose like a jobber? Shouldn't they, like, get a few wins here and there just to make it go, oh, these guys can actually win, or yes, when you see them announced, be like, okay, that's an automatic loss, you know?
Oh, I said that. I actually think I mentioned that last week, Luke, in one of my audio shows, probably VIP Keller Hotline, that, you know, these teams that lose on TV, it doesn't mean anything if they never, ever, ever win. This, I mean, it's this missing piece of the formula, and I know they're like, oh, but everyone will tune out if we do that. There's a lot of stuff on Raw and SmackDown that isn't awesome. It's just part of the experience of watching the wrestling show. And part of the experience of watching a wrestling show should be seeing Breezango come out and get their gimmick over and win in a minute and a half against some of the guys that get squashed by, I was going to say Nia Jax, but that'd be weird. You don't want Breezango beating up the female jobbers. But Braun, you know, whoever Braun Strowman beats up, well, that type of opponent should lose to Breezango in like 90 seconds. Let them get their gimmick over. And it's like they do vignettes for Curt Hawkins to get him over. So you take, you know, great joy in seeing him get beat up. But, you know, have these jobber or these kind of jobber to the stars teams every once in a while. I mean, once every 7 to 10 weeks, give them a win on TV. So, you know, you kind of understand what their shtick is. It's not an A problem. It's not a top three problem, but I don't limit myself to talking about top three problems or top five problems. It just, that's one thing I think that would improve the experience and make those things such as the Shining Stars losing seem more effective for the purpose they're serving if every once in a while they won. Travis, your quick thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree. I think there should be more local talents around to lose to guys, to lose to everyone, but including your lower tier dudes.
Yeah, it's a buffer. I mean, it's a buffer between segments, too. You know, give the crowd a chance to take a deep breath, but you're not doing a 10-minute segment. I mean, you're in and out in 2 minutes, and then you go to a backstage segment or a video package. It's just – and you get to see this. And it's another thing to do. Like, last night was a weird SmackDown in that it was just, you know, a few long matches. And then buttressed by a couple really long talking segments. And from a pacing standpoint, I think it would have been good as from a live show experience and probably from a TV experience to have a couple short squash matches in the mix there, just to break things up. And I just don't think it's a bad thing. If you can do, you know, a long 2 out of 3 falls match with Mickey and Becky, you can do a 2-minute
segment. That
wasn't
long, though.
Well, it had 2 commercial breaks in it. I mean, it went about 14 minutes.
I was going to say 12, but it seemed like the length of a normal one fall match. I thought it had that problem most 2 out of 3 falls matches have, is that, you know, all of a sudden these two high caliber wrestlers, one of them are taking a pinfall in 2 to 4 minutes. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, why is it all of a sudden happening now in the fall? Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just didn't think that was an overly long match.
All right. Luke, anything else?
I just wanted to tell you that I'll be attending the SmackDown Live at Louisville coming up here pretty soon, so I'll give you some live correspondence on that. I think that's April the 18th. So we're 5 rows behind the announcers, so hopefully I'll be able to see over, you know, the whole 20 announce team that they have there.
keep an eye on Tom Phillips and his commercial break, social media activity too.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Hold on, still there?
there was no that I noticed, and I didn't hear people talk. That people, I'm sure, would have jumped all over it online. There was no blatant "let's talk trash to and about Tom Phillips" all episode. Not even one I noticed. Not even one little cheap shot.
I don't think
or
it's
needle.
I don't think they think it's a joking matter yet. You know, I mean, I think it's too fresh. It's too new, and they're not sure probably how they're going to handle it. Morrow's probably breathing a sigh of relief. Maybe they will renew my contract after all. I don't know. We'll see. It's a highly personal matter. People can, you know, Google Tom Phillips cheater while they're researching.
Or we can
whether
talk about it
cheater.
In detail. No.
Or while you're researching whether Bailey's a cheater or not, you can check out Tom Phillips.
God, Wade, you could not have been any more wrong on that last week. I'm like days behind on my audio now most of the time, and I just was like, it's been days. I'm not going to like tweet him and yell at him. But Bailey did absolutely nothing wrong in accepting her championship. There was nothing cheating about what happened. From my eyes, odds were very even after they were tilted in the favor of the heels. Like, Charlotte wouldn't have been in that figure eight to begin with if her heel buddy didn't physically interject herself in the match. So Sasha coming down and jabbing her in the chest with the thing and getting her out of the move was perfectly okay and within a honorable babyface to go, and more importantly, Bailey didn't fall for the okie doke. She didn't go, "Oh, you're right, I need to win it for my daddy," and blah blah blah. Here, giving the heels an absolute victory, and so she can claim she had a moral victory and stayed good, and she didn't let them use her goodness against her. And I applauded her all the whole way through that thing. And at the end, she got in Stephanie's face and said, "Ain't nobody, nothing you can do about it." It's like, good for you, Bailey. So yeah, you were.
But. When her line in that promo is Charlotte's, is she saying Charlotte's making up? She's whining about whatever her line was, that Charlotte, the outcome was unfair, and Charlotte's.
It wasn't cheating. That line works because it wasn't. Charlotte is completely omitting, why they were in that situation to begin with. So it's all a wash.
If Bailey had said and laid it out and made her case, I was fighting fire with fire, then so be it. But
yeah,
she didn't do that.
Do a good job
she accepted. She hit her finisher a second after Sasha Banks attacked her opponent. That is not that's how Randy
her opponent that was about to tap out, and when she was physically assaulted behind the ref's back.
I get that, but this is Bayley. This isn't even Sasha Banks.
You're not going to you don't get to use her goodness against her in that way. And because she no, that's not fair. You don't get to do that. You don't get to play the aren't you so good? Aren't you supposed to be honorable card? And no, I don't care. She's still a pure heart, goodness, soul, all that crap to me still, even given what happened and how she won. It was a total wash. You do that with your hands and, congratulations, Bayley, you're the new champion. No asterisks, no nothing.
I think there's an asterisk there or an asterisk, one or the other. You beat your opponent after they get jabbed in the throat by a crutch, which is how Charlotte sold it. I disagree. I think Bayley her quest to win the title should end with hitting a Bayley to belly and not be doing it to somebody who just got jabbed with a crutch in the most vulnerable bridged positions you can get because you're fighting fire with fire. But second of all,
got her eyes scratched out of her face in the most vulnerable position that she was in a minute or two before.
Right. A rake. Yes. No, I'm not. But if that is what you're going to do, which I don't like that, period. But if that's what you're going to do, because I don't think Bayley should be, then I don't think that should be how Bayley wins. But if you're going to do it, Bayley needs to make her case better. Stephanie made a really good case. The writers stayed up all night writing the case for Stephanie to shame Bayley into how she won the title and how she shouldn't be proud of it. And Bayley didn't make her case. She didn't explain
it. I didn't like her body language, and I didn't like her non as strong as it should have been case. She should have been looking at Stephanie like, nah, I'm not, like, the whole time, not with this sad, oh, what am I going to do? I know what they were trying to go for. She should have the whole time had that I'm not buying it look on her face, like, you're not going to do this to me. You aren't going to, heal it up and try to, again, use my goodness against me so you can win, bad guy. No. That is not how you no. Yeah. So we're just going to, disagree on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't think the standard for the argument is, I'm not arguing that there isn't a justification that Bayley could have made that would have made me feel better about the way the whole thing played out. My issue is I've got this issue with what they booked originally, and now I have a bigger issue because she's saying, Charlotte's trying to tarnish the best week of my life and make up some excuse for her loss. No, the line there is Charlotte's whining and crying because we gave her a piece of her own medicine that I caught fire with fire, and she can't handle it. If she had said that, the whole promo with Stephanie gets off to a better start because now you've got Bayley saying, I'm going to stand up for myself. But instead, Bayley's denying reality. She's making Charlotte out to be a liar when Charlotte's not lying. Charlotte has an excuse. She was jabbed with a crutch right before the Bayley to belly. Bayley needs to counter reality, not ignore reality in making her case. And that's what bugs me about the way Bayley was portrayed. It was sloppy. Stephanie had the best lines written for her. She got to make the best case. And it was time for Bayley to talk. She was just like, well, na-na-na-na, I get to keep it. And that's not a compelling case, especially for the Bayley character. This isn't, if it was a babyface, a version of Sasha Banks, I could deal with it more because Sasha's a little more street and a little less, wholesome by my Bayley bear. So anyway, good talk. I'm glad we got to hash that out, whether we ended on met halfway. I don't know. All right, let's go to Kenny in Galveston, Texas. You know what, Kenny, I'm going to put you on hold. We're way late for our next break. So let me go to our break, and then we'll come back and take more calls. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile friendly, desktop and laptop friendly,
Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with PWTorch.com.
All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Travis Bryant from the PW Torch East Coast Cast, available at eastcoastcast.com. Also a PW Torch columnist, and we are talking about so many hot topics in wrestling this week, and we're going to bring Kenny from Galveston, Texas, into the conversation. Thanks for calling, Kenny. What have you got for us today?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing, Travis?
I've got him muted, so hold on.
Oh,
we'll find out if he's still doing well. Oh, here he is. Travis, are you still doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for asking me.
Okay, good. Things didn't take a downturn during the last break. That's good.
Hey, don't worry. I'm used to it. I actually listen to other shows where conversations are kind of similar to that. But you guys did a good job. I really like that. It got me a different perspective on the whole Bailey situation. And
Where'd you start off? More with Travis or more with me on this?
I actually kind of see it more from Travis's perspective in a lot of ways. You know, I know that's not what you wanted to hear, Wade, but
I'm crushed.
Just from listening to it.
Yeah.
But anyway, kind of moving on to the different subject, I want to talk about Raw. I got one Raw question and one SmackDown question for you. I watched both shows, and I'm gradually liking SmackDown more. The reason why I like SmackDown more than Raw is not besides the fact that it's just 1 hour shorter, is that it's just getting more and more creative. They're trying different things on SmackDown, whether it be hit or miss, and throw a little curveballs here and there. But the best segment on Raw, without question, was the opening segment between Goldberg and Kevin Owens because of the promo, you know, because of its style and the way that both of them carried that whole promo. And then I happened to watch the promos of Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe, and, you know, it's like they both are like, yelling and all that stuff. And really my question on that is, do you think that if they would just calm down, like Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins would calm down in their promos, would they be better, as far as viewed as better workers?
Travis.
I'm not sure. Say just the question, the last, you know, the actual question part. I'm confused. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Kenny. You're saying, would they be perceived as better workers if they talk more calmly on promos? I'm not sure we know what to do with that.
Yeah, that's what my feeling is that amongst, you know, wrestling fans, because, you know, Seth Rollins is, you know, he comes off too whiny, you know, and Samoa Joe comes off as just too loud-headed type. And I know that that's kind of how they got to where they are, but, you know, maybe they change it up a little bit.
To be fair, Joe has not been that in the last 2 years. Since he's been under the WWE umbrella in NXT, he's been, you know, mean and loud when he needs to be. But he's, you know, that's the way he calls him, he's been Joe Cool. He's been the good Joe, especially since he's, you know, in the last 3 or 4 weeks since he's been on Raw. And both of their work is fine. I don't think the two correlate. I don't think how you talk or whatever your cadence is on promos affects the perception of your work. At least not.
I mean, I think
negative.
I think there's. Yeah, I think if somebody is, I don't like Samoa Joe just, you know, blowing his lid. I'm not a fan of that. I think, you know, once every 2 years when he's in a heated feud, he going into that mode, frothing at the mouth works. But otherwise, he's way better when he's cool and intimidating and soft-spoken, way more effective. And I think he goes to the yelling and screaming too much. TNA produced him to do that, and TNA does that a lot, where it's just like, everybody needs to yell. It's like, no, not everybody needs to yell all the time. But, I mean, yeah, if Seth Rollins was, if his character was booked better, then I think people would, you know, to some degree, I guess, respect his overall work in the ring better. But yeah, I think people like what Joe and Seth do in the ring, and they look at that separately from how their promos are scripted or what their temperament is on promos. I think most fans probably differentiate the two. Kenny, what else you have got for us?
Well, moving on to SmackDown, you know, I really liked SmackDown. I mean, as far as the structure of the show. I mean, that whole ending with Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, I know you guys talked about it in detail, but I just want to throw it from maybe a kind of like a wild card scenario, and just the way that it was done. Don't you think that maybe they were kind of giving like smoke signals to the Hardys and say, hey, you know, we can work with you as far as, you know, we know you do a lot of that stuff similar on TNA. Don't you think that maybe it's like saying, hey, we can kind of work with you if you want to come to the WWE? Was that kind of like a hidden message there to you guys?
No, it was WWE saying, we're going to do this corny-ass shoot where he does with all this wonky camera work and crap music and the wrong tone and the wrong time and the wrong, and no, that's WWE being WWE and that's fine. I don't think it was any kind of...
Yeah, and WWE doesn't need to send... They're not going to book a WrestleMania main event angle to send a message to the Hardys that we can work with you when all they have to do is pick up the phone and go, hey, Matt, hey, Jeff, you want to work with us? And they'll be like, yeah, let's talk. So, no, I mean, this would have happened regardless of if Broken Matt ever existed or not. Everything you saw last night would have happened exactly as you saw it if Matt and Jeff Hardy had disappeared off the face of the earth 5 years ago. This is, you know, it was going back to the Wyatt compound. So, yeah, I don't think one had anything to do with the other, Kenny.
Well, if you'd say that, people will remember. People said, did WWE have the confidence to do that Wyatt compound thing because it was after the success of, or relative success of, the individual Broken skits and shows and stuff? That was a talking point back when that compound thing happened. Which one was better? Was one influenced by the other? Or, you know, was the WWE one influenced by the Hardys? So, well, I think that's a question.
Yeah, okay. All right. I think everything we saw with the Wyatts would have probably happened. Certain aspects, perhaps, along the way of what the Wyatts have done might have been inspired or influenced in some way by the Broken Hardys. But I think the Wyatt concept can exist in a world that doesn't, and would have existed in a world without Broken Matt.
Oh, for sure, and did, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would have played out similarly. I mean, some of the actual skits, I think, you know, in the direction they went with it are influenced that way. But I don't think Randy felt to me like Broken Matt. I mean, I didn't look at that going, oh, you know, derivative of Broken Matt or you know, this is a ripoff. I mean, it just felt like its own thing to me. And I've seen enough things wrestling wise over the decades that are, you know, this is along those lines. You know, Broken Matt, give it more credit. It's something more than what they did with Randy last night.
Well,
all right, Kenny,
I just
cool.
assume that, yeah. that maybe that is probably why. You know, like, you know, now that Bray Wyatt doesn't have Luke Harper or Randy Orton, that you never know that they may pair up with, like, Bray Wyatt. And also, in a little side track on Bray Wyatt, seeing him react the way he did, I mean, is that a good thing that we saw him getting emotional like that? Does that help his character in the sense, or does that hurt his character, do you think?
Yeah, well, we have to see where they go. I mean, Travis, this is I don't know if they knew how this would come across or accounted for it, but I mean, even off camera last night at SmackDown, I mean, they as soon as that show ended, you know, the ring announcer just immediately was like, ladies and gentlemen, stick around for the main event. John Cena and Dean Ambrose take on The Miz and Baron Corbin in the main event. But first, 205 Live. I mean, they were already taping the ropes, and Bray Wyatt hadn't even stepped on the ramp yet to return to the back. I mean, it was because they don't want people to leave. You know, it's like they are in rush mode to get ready to go live with 205 Live. And Bray just took this really slow walk up the ramp with his head hung. I thought he was going to, like, be halfway up the ramp when 205 Live's ring introduction started on the stage. I mean, he was selling it off camera big time. Which is a nice touch, you know, to not just as soon as SmackDown ended, Brayden just, you know, sprint to the back and act like, okay, I'm off camera. Who cares? Do you think WWE knows what happened or took into account how there'd be a mixed reaction to how people feel about what Randy did and how Bray reacted? Because I don't think Bray has been sinister enough where fans are like, yeah, he deserved that.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think that's Bray's character. So, and they flirted, obviously, with Bray being babyface before. I think Randy's a better heel than a babyface. Problem is, people are going to chant Randy mindlessly no matter what because he's a star. And I don't think Randy is a particularly great babyface or heel character. He's just sort of a top-tier superstar who people think is good and they're going to cheer him. I don't know. The whole thing is a bit of a mess. And as Kenny says, I mean, that may not work in the way that WWE wanted it to work.
Maybe not, but hopefully they're nimble enough to then go, okay, well, let's go this way. But I know that's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What can you do? All right. Let's go to Demetrius from New Jersey. Demetrius, thanks for calling. What do you got for us?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Travis. How's it going today?
Good.
Tell me.
One thing that I just like thought of when Travis brought up how Petty Orton came across in the segment. Do you guys watch South Park? South Park? Do you ever seen the episode where Cartman is trying to get revenge on Scott Tenorman because he took like $10 from him, and in the end he ends up feeding Scott
his family to him in like a chili cook-off or something. Yeah, totally.
I just put that in my mind. Just thought about it. That's what I just thought
awesome.
The comparison was to.
That
just popped into my head the minute you talked about it. But to go into that segment, the first thing is, I thought they were first going to go with a Katie Vick type of angle for a second. I thought it was going to be Katie Vick all over again when they started bringing up Abigail.
Yeah.
Which I was afraid of. I was afraid of that.
The worms and everything.
I mean, to me, it was just like, there is no way, in my opinion, that Randy Orton's a face. I'm like, he committed arson and I think murder because the cameraman was still inside on live television.
Well,
so it's like, to me,
it could have been a tripod, I guess.
True, but I mean, you never know. Every time you bring up the cameras, I just, your voice pops in my head all the time whenever I think about the camera. I feel like Orton is the heel in this. I just thought that came across very poorly. My question is about Drew Galloway. If he goes back to WWE, what do you see them pushing him just right to the top? Do you see him maybe being back at the same level? Because, I mean, you just never know with these kind of things. He could end up back as like what Curt Hawkins is. But do you think that they'll end up putting him back in putting him in a top position if they re-sign him?
He'd be closer to the top than he would Curt Hawkins. I mean, that's...
just like, you look at where Curt Hawkins was. I mean, you look where Drew McIntyre was before he left. And
yeah, but he was
like,
above Curt Hawkins.
Yeah. True. But like, you never know if, like, you know, if Vince has a change of heart or anything like that on him. If not,
yeah,
I mean,
I just
he's
think
got.
Kurt's in the or those Kurt, the Hardys, but Drew Galloway especially is in a favorable position because they need talent. They need people to be able to, you know, carry segments and be in, you know, mid card at least to. You know, segments and storylines and matches, and once everybody goes home, once Undertaker and Goldberg and Lesnar go away in April, they're going to need guys for spring and summer and just period. Yeah. So, Galloway's in a decent enough position that he'll be able to come in and then prove himself. I don't think they'll put him at the top, but they'll certainly give him an opportunity, and he won't be Curt Hawkins. That's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Drew Galloway is, I think, could be it. Whether they realize it or not, and maybe Vince is hung up on three-man band and whatever, you know, images he has of Drew. But Drew, as he said a few weeks ago to me on the live cast, he's turned, you know, since he left WWE, he's turned into a man. You know, like he's a different.
I love that interview, by the way. That was a great interview. I really did enjoy listening to that. I thought it was a great one.
Yeah, I thought Drew was really really good in that, and really talked, I thought honestly, about how he feels he's in a different place and carries himself differently, presents himself differently, and I think Vince, I hope somebody, if someone's an advocate for Drew Galloway, they should put a video, just you know, 4 minutes together showing Drew as both a heel and a face to Vince since he left, because I think he is in a different place now than he was as a character, as a person. He comes across much more alpha, much more, has, you know, just, I don't know. He has more command of the room. than he did when he was in WWE. And they need top baby faces. And I think Drew can be a really good, and he's big, you know, like he's not, Vince would like that aspect of him. He is an earnest baby face without, I think he walks the line of being corny, but I think just being at SmackDown last night, those fans at that SmackDown taping, are that building is full of people who I think would love to hear the type of babyface promos Drew gave in TNA last year. That I love, this is my life. I love what I do. I'm here to win championships. I want to be the best at what I do, and I want the fan support. He is everything that Roman Reigns is too big of a D-bag to lower himself to do, which is, I know, that's probably too harsh, but his character, his personality can't ask for the fans. He can't admit that maybe he cares that they cheer for him. He's just there to, you know, do what he's told and get rich and kick ass and all that. And there's a place for that type of character, but he doesn't go either direction. But Drew embraces it. He's like, I was a fan. You guys are fans. I love that you're my fan. And then he goes and he can work a good match in a main event style. So I just think, and I think Mike McMahon maybe is going to make a similar point based on his tweet earlier today on the live cast tomorrow night. I think he could be a real important top babyface to WWE. He is turnkey. You know, this isn't 2 years in NXT. Yeah. He's turnkey. Put him on the main roster and go.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess like I was just hoping that he just does not end up back in the same position that he was before. That's what I was like my only fear, because like
he'd
look out of
place.
What happened with Kurt Hawk. Yeah.
If they tried to portray Drew Galloway the way that he was in Three Man Band or Kurt Hawkins, people would look and they'd reject it. I think fans would go, "What do you? This isn't." I mean, they'd be like, you know, having Roman Reigns be one of be a sidekick to Rusev. I mean, it's just, it wouldn't fit. It'd just be ridiculous. I think Drew comes across too alpha.
Because I understand Push when they were against Daniel Bryan, because he didn't have the look. I mean, Drew Galloway, you know, 6'4", was 6'5", you know, he's got incredible size. Like I said, he's big. He's a big guy. I mean, he's just someone I think Vince just would look at and just be salivating over. Like, he just looks like he just would want to push him to the moon now, especially.
Well, if he had been main eventing New Japan for the last 8 years and never been to WWE, he'd be the hottest free agent and Vince would be all over it. It's just a matter of,
All
right. Yeah. Beatrice, anything else? I want to get to some more callers. We got so many on hold. We're not.
I'm gonna let you guys get the other callers. But thanks for taking my call, guys.
Cool. Yep. We'll talk to you throughout the week, or send me an email if you got more you want me to talk about on the Wade Keller Hotline. All right, it's Demetrius from New Jersey. Let's go to our final ad of the our final break of the show here. When we come back, the final run of phone calls: 515-605-9345.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you.
All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Travis Bryant. Check out his show every Wednesday night live, eastcoastcast.com. And you can also subscribe to that on popular podcast apps. He's also a Pro Wrestling Torch columnist and co-host of the Midweek Flagship on a semi-regular basis. We're taking your phone calls, talking about a busy start to the week in pro wrestling, and it gets busier. Huge UFC show this weekend, Saturday night. We'll have live coverage at MMATorch.com. We'll be really amping up our preview of the show over the next couple of days. So if you're an MMA fan, UFC fan, definitely check out live coverage Saturday night. Mike Hisko has you covered with his live report. And we'll have all kinds of stuff in the lead up, live coverage during the show, and then a lot of fallout on Saturday night through Sunday, Monday. And then Fastlane on Sunday. Travis, what's the top story coming out of Fastlane? What are you looking forward to most in terms of matches or storyline progression?
Yeah, if Kevin Owens is able to somehow hang on to that to that title. I think it was last week's show. Yeah, the Spotlight show. That promo kind of, I started to doubt, like, well, is Goldberg a shoo-in to win the title now? Because that promo just convinced me maybe Owens finds a way. And then you had the guy call in or email to one of your Ask the Editors episodes, and he's like, you know, the Bret Hart, you know, metal plate under his shirt. Like, holy crap, yeah, that'd be awesome. But instead, I'd want Owens to find a way to win. Or, well, you can't exactly go pinning Goldberg if you want him to, you know, go on to Mania. So you have to probably do something really wonky and stupid, but I'd take that over and then have Jericho face Owens at Mania and say between now and Mania, Owens cost Jericho the U.S. title, so it's not a title versus title, or Jericho goes in holding a title that he's not defending, and it's do Owens Jericho, and still do obviously Lesnar Goldberg, which does not need a title, and U.S. thing if you need it or whatever.
I talked on Monday night about the about how maybe the title needs Goldberg Lesnar. You know, we always, you know, my initial perspective for a while was that you said, Travis, you know, that match doesn't need a title. And I agree with that. It's larger. It's a big special attraction match that does not need a title. The percentage increase in interest in that match is small if a title is on the line versus no title based on who they are in the story they've told. But the championship has been held for a day by Finn Balor and since then by Kevin Owens, who's been more a sidekick to Chris Jericho in a best friend storyline than a fighting champion who's brought prestige to the title. Is it maybe beneficial for the lineage and prestige of the Universal Championship as a brand, as an entity, to take a detour to actually be in the biggest match perhaps at WrestleMania and be around the waist afterwards of either Lesnar, you know, or go in with Goldberg and maybe also make a pit stop on Lesnar's waist or shoulder? Does that help whoever then holds it next, who's a full-time talent? Or do you put the Universal title on Jericho Owens, have it be a mid-card match, likely at best? And are you at risk of the Universal Championship kind of feeling not quite like, you know, Alberto Del Rio's world title SmackDown reign, but, you know, it doesn't feel like it's actually the main event of WrestleMania or even close to it?
Yeah, I'm less concerned with how the Universal title is portrayed, perceived at Mania than I am, number one, hot potatoing the thing, Owens to Goldberg to Lesnar to, you know, at least three in a month or a month and a half. And then Lesnar holding the thing, presumably. Or I like the idea of where he's just that guy on his resume. Like, he still can't be Goldberg. Like, you go in and you do the same thing. Goldberg goes in champ, and Goldberg does the same, basically the same, you know, just beats Lesnar. And it's just, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
I'd rather that than Lesnar take it and then he's not going to be around. We've been there. We've done that. I didn't like it then, and I wouldn't like it now. I'd rather Owens go in and they do him and Jericho, and then both the titles, whether it's Bray versus Orton or Bray versus AJ or Bray versus all three, you know, Triple Threat or whatever. Both titles, unfortunately, aren't anywhere near the main event, and you got this part-time thing and timers and Lesnar and Goldberg, which is the most important, and maybe Undertaker, Roman, I'm far less concerned with how the Universal title is perceived, because that can be eventually worked out.
Yeah. I'm throwing it out there as another, for your consideration aspect.
Sure.
To this, so
totally get it.
Yeah. All right, let's go to who's up next? Let's go to Kenny in Mobile, Alabama. Thanks for calling, Kenny. What do we got for Travis and me?
Hey guys, y'all hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Yeah.
We all talked a lot on the Bray Wyatt Randy Orton segment, and
You know, I felt really bad for Bray, honestly, at the end of that segment. I mean, if Bray had been, you know, like you said, way more sinisterly up to this, I could, you know, understand why Randy.
He didn't treat Randy bad. He had been like a bully to him the last few months, or undermining him, or
not like
taking
Miz
away opportunity.
Like, this is what Damian Sandow should have done to Miz, like, you know, some great side of Miz's love fun. You know, the way that Miz treated him.
What I wanted to talk about is that I attended a show here in Mobile in January, a house show, and Roman Reigns and Owens headlined the event, and Roman was as over as could be here in Alabama. In y'all's experience traveling to shows, more southern states, I guess, more full of casual fans than, you know, smart fans or smarks, whatever you want to call it. Because my 16-year-old sister's a huge Roman Reigns fan, and she gets very upset when I, you know, talk about why I don't like him. And she goes, she thinks everybody just boos him because we're jealous of him or whatever
else. Well, that's exactly why the adult male demographic boos him, because all the women think they're all jealous of him because what's the word, Travis? How do teenage girls feel about Roman Reigns?
Oh, I mean, I was just going to say because he's a
dreamy
man and super
gorgeous,
athletic,
dreamy
muscles.
I mean, no.
I mean,
thing.
I am kind of jealous of him, but you know, I mean, not enough that I'm going to let that be why I don't like a guy. I mean, I liked him from the beginning when he first was like, oh yeah, that's the guy to watch out, look out for. Then you just got to know him, and it was one of those things. Like,
the things about Roman Reigns that guys don't like, teenage girls are blind to. And they look through a different lens. And, I mean, he gets different reactions from different types of fans. Here's the thing. Fans who cheer wildly for Roman Reigns cheer for whoever the main event babyface is that WWE gives to them, because he looks the part, and he's given that push, and he's treated like a celebrity. That's what happens when you're in that top spot. The key is, do you draw money, and do you turn off a huge part of the fan base? And there are people who are going to buy into what WWE gives them. They eat what they're fed, and they don't question it because they're fans of the brand, and they're there because of the structure of cheering a good guy against a bad guy. Not anybody would they cheer like they cheer Roman Reigns. I'm not taking, you know, I'm not saying that he's interchangeable with anybody. You know, Jeff, it's not like Jeff Jarrett would get the pops from the teenage girls at the same age, at age 30, that Roman is. I mean, he has certain qualities. But the key is there more money in him being a heel? Is he the guy who could make money from the girls who are cheering him and the guys who are booing him when they all collectively boo him because he embraces how he comes across? And I think the argument a lot of us make is there's a ton more money in that than fighting the headwind from the anti-establishment minority who fill buildings. It's not – as for the Southern question, no. I mean, it has to do with the night of the week and the market and other things going on. You know, what kind of crowd gets drawn in a certain market. I mean, yes, Philadelphia, Travis, is one type of crowd that's going to be different than you're going to get in Mobile, Alabama. I mean, there's differences from one town to another, one region to another, and less so than it used to be. But some of it had to do back in the, you know, over the last 25 years, it had to do with what territory, what style of wrestling was promoted in that region by that regional promoter, that territorial promoter. Now I would say we're a couple generations, you know, removed from that being a major effect. But for a while, that was a factor. You know, who did that fan base grow up watching, and WWE came into town and tried to present a different product? That's why WWF had trouble at first in the Southeast getting over, because it was such a different brand and presentation of pro wrestling than what the NWA, Jim Crockett, promoted, and, you know, Ric Flair and the Horsemen and Midnight Express, Jim Cornette. It was a totally different vibe, and wrestling fans rejected what WWF presented. Well, now, you know, the memories of that, of Jim Crockett Promotions is fading, and there's a generation of people who grew up with only WWF or maybe a little WCW. So it's interesting, the regional differences. Travis, can you peg why certain markets cheer Roman and others don't? Is there another answer to it? Another explanation?
I think there's a big city I don't want to say sophistication because that implies, you know, people not from big cities can't be sophisticated, and that's not what I mean. But there's more of a, okay, like, the, you know, Southern people definitely even say this. There's a slowness or a different pace, a slower pace, not slowness, but definitely a slower pace, and everything's not go, 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 go. Like, they definitely pride themselves in sitting down and still being closer-knit families and having dinner with each other at a table at one time. And, you know, so I think there's just a cultural difference. Well, not think. There obviously is. That's a silly, you know, that's a pretty obvious thing. But because of the slower pace, they're not, they don't necessarily get into, let's like, an anti-hero. So they're more willing to buy into someone who's, this is more of a Cena argument, because Romans, I wouldn't call him a goody-goody, but they're more willing to eat what's fed to him, swallow what's given to him, and not
they're
be
less
contrarian and things like that.
And they're less cynical, too. I mean, they're just, you know, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, it's in L.A., I mean, there's more money at stake. It's a more major...
Well, I wouldn't put... it could be a small thing, but I just wouldn't put... I'd put Chicago there, but I wouldn't put L.A. They'd leave at halftime and, you know, in the seventh inning. Their Dodgers games are notorious for... Like, so L.A. fans, that's an even different kind of attitude from the Northeast and upper Midwest and something like in the South. That's a whole different conversation and attitude that we'd have to add into it.
No, it is. I mean, they're not all the same, but I think what the point that I was making is this aspect that I'm about to get to is similar in that L.A., Philadelphia, Boston, New York, they're used to the big stars coming to the big arena. They are – their mayors are perhaps nationally known.
The big concert acts always. You can guarantee if Jay-Z's touring, well, of course he's going to stop in Philadelphia. Of course he's going to be in Boston. Of course he's going to be somewhere near D.C., you know, Baltimore area or L.A. or Austin, Texas or Houston and Dallas. That's almost a given. Is he going to go to Mobile? You might have to go to, I don't know, is Birmingham or Montgomery? I don't know, whatever, the big city. You might have to drive 3 hours to or a state over. You might have to go to North Carolina. I don't even know how this works geographically.
Right.
But I think my point's made. Yes, I'm trying to add to your thing. Wait.
Yeah. So I think there is, when you get to a smaller market, there's a sense of, oh, WWE came to town. Roman Reigns is their top star. All right. You know, we're graced by greatness. And I think in big markets, they're sort of like, yawn, I just, you know, went to have coffee and Robert Redford sat next to me. Or I went to have coffee and, you know, whoever, you know, someone, you know, Hillary Clinton.
I don't even think it's personal seeing celebrities. I think it's like my thing about when I visited New York the first time as an adult, you know, 19 or 20, like, do the billboards have to take up the entire side of the building? Like, give me a break, Gap. I don't need that attitude of seeing giant everything in lights, Times Square. You're like, eh, yeah, and whatever. So it doesn't even necessarily have to be. Oh yeah,
yeah.
So ex celebrity or newscaster or whoever. It's, well, I'm just so used to hustle and bustle. Everything's lit up 3 o'clock in the morning. If I want to get snow tires, you know, and cream corn, I can find a place that has, you know, I can get both those things because it's New York, we never sleep, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, I mean, our news anchors, our meteorologists are kind of local celebrities. And in bigger markets, it's like, you know, you spit on their shoes if you see them on the sidewalk. So, you know, they're these lowly, you know, what, I don't know. Anyway, Kenny, anything else?
Yeah, that's it, guys. I mean, back in the day when it was Roman and Batista, the final two at the Rumble, I mean, I was pulling for Roman in that moment, you know? Like, I wanted Roman to win that year. And it's crazy, a year later, he won the Rumble, and I was disgusted with him by that point. You know, I really didn't care about the guy.
It's the same thing that happened with Cena in Chicago. When he debuted that new title, the Spinner World title, on the show where JBL put his arms and a box of octopus guts or whatever that was. They were in Chicago for that show. They went nuts for Cena in the new title. 11 months later, when he defended against HBK, I think. Yeah, it was, you know, Cena sucks. Same building, same, you would think, same crowd. Yeah.
That's interesting. All right, Kenny, appreciate the call. Good topic. All right, last call. Reginald from Portland. What have you got? What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How you doing? What's up, Travis? Hello, you people, as Pat McNeil would say. How you guys doing today?
Good. Still good.
Good. Actually, I was going to elaborate on the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt thing real fast.
Good.
You know, Travis, I have a perfect word to describe the whole scenario for you. Tell me if you agree. Tacky. It was very, very tacky.
I like that.
Yeah, because it's one thing that really gets on my nerves is WWE's attempts at serious drama comes off as really juvenile. It's like the kid in class who tries to impress you with drawings of machine guns and things on fire. It's like, I get it. You want to be cool. I get it, man. I really get it. You're dark.
And I think it's also they can't, for a lot of reasons, go all the way with things. Like the reason the sourpuss guy, Sour Lemons?
I don't know.
He had the lollipop and the whole entourage with him that danced to rave music and crap. Him, Adam Cole, I don't know, whatever.
Adam Rose?
West or something. Adam Rose.
Yeah, Rose.
The reason he didn't work is because you can't do an Adam Rose party ecstasy drug sex gimmick in 2017, last 8-10 years WWE, and make it work and make it good. You're gonna have this sanitized guy. You can't say the things you want to say. You can't use the innuendo and the references that you would want to make that kind of adult character work. And it's the same with when they do these kinds of it was juvenile, but it was way too serious to be as eighth grade kind of theater project feel to it, you know, like zooming out,
right?
Stupid chair. Well, we're supposed to believe the chair is haunted and it's not a little gimmick under it to keep it rocking. Like, so Randy isn't freaked out that he's in a haunted barn?
Yeah,
like, he's just okay with that.
Yeah.
It's Shakespeare in the Park. It's really bad, really bad acting. It's like Shakespeare in the Park, you know? It's like they're trying to do this whole figurehead, like, you know, Haunted Mansion thing or rated R horror movie, but you can't do rated R horror movies if it's PG.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. You know, it just comes off like really, really, really corny because I like it when they go shoot. I love the whole when you take me outside of the ring aspect sometimes. You know, you give me a little break as a viewer, but it just really came off hackneyed and corny. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I think those are good words. I mean, hackneyed, corny, and tacky is how I felt. I felt bad, Travis, because at SmackDown, they didn't have the scoreboard. Like, the scoreboard was lifted up and turned off. Like, it was, you know, way up. Nobody, there's like a big part of the audience was kind of sitting at an angle because it was a huge crowd. Really good crowd. And the people were sitting to the side of the stage. And the way the SmackDown screen is, it kind of bulges out a little bit. So it's like at a weird angle. So there were like probably 1,000 people who had to sit there and listen to Randy Orton and couldn't see a thing. Which is, I mean, whatever.
So it was similar to how our seats were at Extreme Rules, how we had
like people were
on the side. And
dead on the side. And they sold enough seats. They actually sold some that were behind, like at an angle at actually behind the stage, where they'd be looking at the backs of wrestlers walking out. That's how big the crowd was. I mean, they haven't been to XL Energy Center for a TV event maybe ever. Jason and I were trying to remember a time last night, and they usually go to Target Center 10 minutes west on 94 in Minneapolis. So this was I don't know if they got the east side of the Twin Cities excited or what, but it was a huge crowd. But yeah, I felt bad for them. They should have had ideally the scoreboard would have been down so people could have watched that from different parts of the building. But
all right, Travis, let's wrap up on that note. We will follow up with a VIP after show, just as I did with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net last week. Got some other topics that I want to bring up with you, including delving into the John Cena, Nikki Bella, Miz, Maurice segment. And I've got an email or two that we can get to also about the women's division. So let's save that as a bonus for VIP members. VIP members, check out the VIP after show on the VIP exclusive podcast feed later on today. That'll do it for me for today. Check us out. Interview Thursday tomorrow, the post-impact show tomorrow, primetime Friday at 7 Eastern this Friday. And then Sunday night, Pat McNeil and Greg Parks host the WWE Fastlane post show here at pwtorchlivecast.com. You can find our shows online and on demand, live or on demand, at pwtorchlivecast.com. If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with a 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Thanks, everybody. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch and follow our sister brand at MMATorch. No!